we're going to continue our series on issues that come up at work. Last week, Rabbi Ehrenfeld spoke about questions related to Yichud. So tonight, I'm going to look at a couple of issues related to Kashrus. So one of the big questions that comes up when you're in an office setting, which in my office setting, this doesn't come up so much, but in somebody else's office setting, is the issue of heating up food in the office. Because a lot of offices have microwaves, right? I don't know if your office has a microwave. And these microwaves are used by lots of different kinds of people. So one of the things that I did in preparation for this year, Rav Schechter and Lahavdu Ben Achaim Ben Achaim, Rav Yisrael Belsky, Zichron Levracha, Rav Belsky and Rav Schechter were the poskim for the OU Kashrus division. And the way that it worked, I don't know how it works now, that Rav Belsky just passed away last year, was that Rav Belsky would come to the OU on Thursday, you know, the OU office on Broadway, and then Rav Schechter would come in on Friday. And during the week, the RCs, the rabbinic coordinators, and the Rabbanim would send in different questions, kashrus questions. They would have a list of shilas. Rabbi Belsky would review them on Thursday, and he would take notes. Then he would leave his notes for Rav Schechter on Friday, and Rav Schechter would write his notes. And through this way, they actually have, I have some of these files, they have a tremendous, vast repository of amazing tshuvas that are back and forth like that. And then a couple of years ago, they did a joint panel about kashrus issues that come up, and people sent in tons of shilas. So you can actually watch it on the OU website if you dig it up. There's a lot of amazing stuff there. So the first question comes up is, well, let's say you have a microwave, it says it's only for kosher food. So Rav Schechter, he thought that that would not necessarily be enough to assume that all the food in the microwave is kosher, because not everybody who is in the office is aware of what that means or is sensitive to this, to the strictness of that. So just because you have a microwave that you assume nobody else used, or you want to assume that nobody else used it, doesn't necessarily mean that nobody else used it. So how do you go about heating up food in a treif microwave? So the first thing to think about is, well, what are the potential issues that come up in a microwave? How would it be that your food is going to become treif because of somebody's non-kosher microwave? Well, how did the microwave become treif in the first place? So generally speaking, when you put food in the microwave, there's not a lot of gunk in there. In a standard microwave, there's not a lot of mamashes, there's not a lot of be'en. What is there? There's belia, there is taste that is infused into the walls. So how did that taste get into the walls? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us, if you look on page 1, the first principle that we need to know about microwaves, and that's what we can call, traditionally we call it zeya. Zeya means thick steam. So you have a machavas on page 1 in the bracket, in the box, you have a machavas shel chalav, a pan of milk, shenasnu bekira, that you put it in an oven, in a small enclosed space, tachas kedera shel basar, it's right underneath a pot full of meat. Hazeya, turn to page 2, ola venivla bekedera veosarta. So if you have, if this is my pot of milk, and this is my pot of meat, since it's in a kira, it's in an oven enclosed space, it's contained. So the zeya, the thick steam, that's heat that's coming up from the bottom, is going to be nivla, it's going to be suffused through the pot and into the food on the top shelf. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. So that's the primary consideration when you talk about what's going on in your microwave. You're thinking about the belia, the taste that's infused into the walls. So what's going to happen if I heat up my food? Then the food is going to emit steam, and that is going to carry the belia, is going to come back into my food. So therefore, the answer to solve this problem is to cover your food. And me'ikar adin, that means you only have to be concerned about preventing steam. So how do you prevent steam? Any covering. One covering is adequate to prevent steam. The same thing is true in your oven. In theory, I'm not sure that this is a good practice, but in theory, you could cook milchigs and fleischigs in the oven at the same time. If both of them are covered, so there's no zeya, there's also something called recha, which is not the same case in the microwave because they're not at the same time, but if they're both covered, so you're not going to have any zeya. There's not going to be any thick steam that's coming out of your food. So, does that
extend to, not cooking milchigs and fleischigs at the same time, but cooking at different times, like...
Same thing. If you're concerned about cooking them at different times, which is a big machlokas about whether or not it's permitted one after the other, part of it has to do with whether we're concerned about zeya. In general, Rav Schechter is not so concerned about thick steam, because he says, if you look in the oven, you don't get a lot of thick steam cooking in your oven on a regular basis, right? Even when you cook chicken in the oven, there's not a lot of thick steam, so Shechter is more mekel when it comes to these things. Others are more machmir, but that would also be true. Let's say in our house, our oven is always fleishig, Baruch Hashem. If you ever want to cook milchiks in the oven, you have no problem about zeya, about the blias or anything. You just cover it. So that's your simple answer. So Rav Shechter added that it's probably good to put it into a second covering. Why? Just in case that it rips. And Rav Belsky pointed out that you're allowed to have a little bit of air coming out of your bag, which is naturally going to be the case, because otherwise what would happen? It'll explode. But you should just make sure that it's not too much, that you're going to have a ton of zeya coming out of it. And Rav Belsky added one other important ha'ara, which is, he said, this is all true and fine and good when you're talking about a plastic bag or a Ziploc. But if you use a napkin, because the napkin absorbs the moisture, so you're not necessarily going to solve your zeya problem. Many of us know this. When we put stuff in the microwave and we cover it with a napkin, that's not necessarily going to make it, you know, protected from the outside. So it should be something that's not permeable, like a plastic bag, and it doesn't have to be a Ziploc. It could be a regular plastic bag that you put on the bottom.
So does that then trafe up the keli that is in, like, well, it's not a Ziploc, but it's your actual bowl?
Okay.
So you cover the top, but the bowl is still exposed. So,
great.
Like, the zeya is, you don't really care. Like, the zeya, if this thing emits zeya, well, what do I care if it trafes up the microwave? The microwave's already trafed.
Right. It's because the zeya is creating this back and forth connection between the microwave and you. But if you cover it, you're not going to have any zeya. It's not going to get out.
You yeah, won't be mad.
We're not saying the steam taking things from the
right.
microwave.
So the microwave steam from the microwave is the, into the bowl.
So this goes back to how microwaves operate, which is microwaves don't actually have any heat in the walls. The microwaves shoot these invisible rays into the food, and it gets the molecules in the food all antsy, and that movement of the molecules is what heats them up. So actually, it's different than... there are different kinds of microwaves. There are traditional microwaves. Now there are convection microwaves where they have an additional heating element outside. But a traditional microwave, there's actually no heat in the walls. So what we're worried about is making sure there's no zeya being manufactured here. So if you cover your bowl, let's say, you know, I'm thinking a lot of times you cook things in the microwave with steam, but you cover them, so it's not a problem. You cook corn. You take 3 pieces of corn, put a little water on the bottom, you microwave it for 10 minutes or whatever. The corn is cooked when it comes out. When you take off that thing, if you're not careful, you'll burn your fingers because of the hot steam. But if it's covered, there is no zeya. So when you're cooking, so therefore, even if the microwave is trafe, my bowl doesn't become trafe because there's nothing that's...
You still have to vent the food a little bit, right? I mean...
So in the case of the corn, I don't think usually... you put any vent there, and sometimes it kind of like creates a little meniscus,
yeah, a vacuum.
But this brings us to one more point, which is important to bring out here, which, let's say you have a dirty microwave, or let's say you have an oven, or somebody's going to, you know, a place where they're delivering food for you. So here you'll find very often that people don't use a single cover, they use a double cover. Why? Why did they use 2 covers? The answer is because they're not just concerned about zeya. They're concerned about the other food that's going on in there, the zeya from the other food or the spillage. And what happens is the halacha is the Shulchan Aruch, which I didn't put inside because it's too long for tonight. Shulchan Aruch rules that if you have a food on one side of the pot, meaning the inside, and then you have splatter on the other side of the pot, we consider that to be transferred from one side to the other. But the Shulchan Aruch says you never have transfer between 2 pots that are adjacent to each other. Exactly. So theoretically, you could be cooking, and this could be your treif pot, and this is your kosher pot, and the two of them are actually touching each other. But there's not going to be any transfer. Why? Because there's no liquid medium that's going to transfer the tam. So what you do when you double cover food is you create essentially 2 pots. Bingo. The interior cover, that's 1 pot. On the inside of the food. The exterior cover, that's the outside. So let's say you get your airline meal or your little Noah's Ark wrapped up, whatever it is. So let's say in the oven they were very sloppy in the kitchen and they spilled tray food on the outside of your packaging. It's okay because if you look at it sideways, you're looking at the outside kli and the inside kli. So that's why you'll find a lot of places they're going to double cover. It's different than the microwave, because in the microwave, you control what's on the outside. So if you control the zeya, so you have no problem. In the treif oven in the kitchen, where they're heating up your pre-wrapped meal, they need a double cover, because you don't know what's happening on the outside. If next to your kosher meal. There's a treif meal with zeya, the steam coming out of it. You might not see it, but you will have had food that's been treifed up. So that's issue number one about microwaves.
Are there any shuvas recently that would say that what Shachar said was a function of what their pots were made out of and might be different today?
Great. So there's a lot of discussion about that. Stainless steel, Rabbi Tversky from the Skog Yeshiva. Dov, is he your Rebbe? Rav Chaim Tversky? He's amazing. So he told me, I think he told me that he did an experiment with radioactive isotopes to see whether or not there would be blias in stainless steel kalim. So it's an interesting question, but I would say one indicator of this issue is allergens. You know, some of us have kids who have allergies. Mm-hmm. So the things will say made with utensils or facilities that contain nuts. They clean them out. It's not enough because even in some of this equipment, they're sensitive to the fact that there are bleos, actually. There actually is some residual taste or some chemical residue that's left in the walls of these pieces of machinery in the factory. And therefore, there are some kids who are so allergic, they can't eat food items that are made on the same lines, the same equipment. So that's an indication of bleos. In terms of the actual bleos in stainless steel, so I think the accepted opinion is that it's a low plug, meaning it could be true. I think Rabbi Tversky said there are no bleas in certain stainless steel equipment, actually in the walls. But halachically, we're going to treat them all the same.
Isn't there a halacha? I'm sorry if we're getting off topic.
That's okay.
Isn't there a halacha? If you have a pot that's boiling, right? Let's say you have kosher food in it.
Yes.
Meat. You drop some milk in it.
Yes.
As long as the pot's still boiling, it's not treif, right? Because it wasn't. The two tastes don't become integrated under those circumstances.
So there is a discussion in the Gemara about while something is still boiling, but that's not really going to help you because the second that it goes down, you're going to still have that.
Right, but with a microwave, I'm just not, like, I know maybe I shouldn't be thinking of this from physics, but I'm still not really getting how the steam coming out of my food, especially if it's while that's actually happening, there's no way anything from the walls of the microwave are going to get into my food.
When it cools down. So
why? If you have a chamber full of steam, mm-hmm. then the taste is transferred in both directions.
You're essentially losing the taste from the walls. By steaming the walls,
So the walls are steaming and it's going to come back into the
pot. Right, when
exactly.
When it cools down,
it all gets mixed together. Yeah.
When it cools down, there'll be a vacuum.
Right, sucks it back in.
Exactly. Okay. And the transference. Okay. So this is issue number one. Number two is the water heater, the water urn in the office.
Kumkum.
Right. The office water heater. Now, today it's a little different. I actually sent an email, but I didn't get a response. I don't drink coffee, so I don't use a Keurig. We don't have a Keurig. But I asked Rabbi David Cohn of the CRC. I didn't hear back from him yet. When I hear back, I'll let everybody know. I wanted to know what's the story with Keurigs, because I think some of the little pods have flavorings that don't have a hashgacha. Mm-hmm. And they don't have hashgacha because they have some non-kosher flavoring ingredients. So I was curious to ask him, because I don't know the exact mechanism of how those things work, where the bishul is taking place and all that, but I'm curious. But let's go back to the old traditional water heater. You know, you want to heat up your hot water to have tea or coffee or the tradition soup wherever you are if you're in...
I've never gotten that desperate.
Really?
That's impressive. 7.5 years, I've never gotten that desperate.
So, do you have to worry that somebody else trafed up the water heater or the coffee pot? So, generally speaking, if you look on page 3, Rama has a comment. That was in Hilchos Basa B'Cholof. Now we're going to move later to Hilchos Taruvas. Rama has a comment. He says, "Aser laros mikli sheish bo shuman kasher lener doleg sheish bo chelev o shuman iser." The Rama says you can't take a kosher vessel. Here I am. I have kosher and pour it into a hot treif pot. I have kosher food and I'm going to pour it into a hot treif pot.
Why would you even think to do that?
So let's say, for whatever reason, you're in a treif restaurant or something, and they ask you, you need some water. So the Rama is concerned that if you pour in, you actually will have treifed up the item on the top, which is cold. It's not even hot.
The pouring vessel?
Oh, so the question is why not? So the Taz here mentions something called Nitzok and Tata Gavar, which is an interesting question whether or not we're machmer for this concept of connection. But the Shach on the bottom says Mishum Taha Hevel Ola Mehaner Lamaila King Mucha Chatam. Because what's going to happen? That the steam or the splatter, he doesn't say splatter, but maybe you could suggest the splatter, is going to go from the bottom to the top. But this is because, Rabelsky explains, that this is because you have a cold item on top and a hot item on the bottom. So the interaction there is going to cause this reaction. But if you have hot water on the top and an empty cup on the bottom, he says, then you don't have to be worried. He says, only in Hilchos Pesach, where we have added stringencies, then do you have to worry that you're going to come from your hot water chaynik that was used by the last guy for whatever his instant non-kosher meal was. But when it comes to regular, you don't have to worry. So what does he think? He says, well, maybe do you have to worry that, and this is, by the way, true also, it's an important thing to keep in mind for the house. You know, sometimes if you make oatmeal, so then does that mean that your whole chaynik became, if you have dairy. Oatmeal, right, did it become dairy? So Rabelsky would say no, because the oatmeal on the bottom is cold, and the water on the hot is top. On the top is hot. So the Ramah writes, Ubidyevin ain't lachosh. If it happened, you don't have to worry about it. So lechatchila, he's talking about where it's cold into hot. But if it's hot into cold, then even lechatchila, it's mutter. So what do you have to worry in some of our houses where we have small people? So they may be making their own hot chocolate. So they take the thing and they stick it in there and actually have the milchigs, hot chocolate, touching the edge of the spigot. So if that's the case, then you have to be concerned. But most people in most normal workplaces, they're not like sticking their stuff into the thing. It sounds like it's a far-fetched chashash. And if you are worried about such a thing, so what do? So you can kosher it. You just take, like in the house, if you're worried that one of the kids milchified the spigot by touching it, so you just take your boiling water, put it in the same place, and then, so it's kosher. So you don't have to worry about using those things. And the same thing, by extension, I once asked Rabbi Sobolovsky, we were traveling somewhere, and we wanted to use the hot water from the coffee urn in the hotel, in the coffee pot. So I called him, I said, do you think you have to be worried? So he said he doesn't think so. In these hotels, when you travel, they have a coffee urn, but that coffee urn has a pot for water, not for coffee. They give you the coffee, you put it in your cup. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, normal people are filling the hot water thing with just water. And even if they're putting in coffee, what coffee do they give you? They give you regular plain coffee, which doesn't need a hashgacha if it's not flavored coffee. So you can go to any hotel and you heat up water in that coffee mate machine and you can use it.
So cold to hot is a problem, but is hot to hot a problem?
No, also not a problem, because it's that, the way that Rabelsky explained it, it's that the clash of the, you know, the temperatures that creates this distinction.
That's something you can also do on Shabbos, like if you're running out of
water. Your chalent is burnt, is exactly, you put it under the thing. Exactly. So that's issue number two.
My understanding is sure. That one should be careful when pouring hot water into their sink, that the steam could rise up into the spigot of the faucet, right? Whether it's milk or flay shakes, right? That could be an issue, no?
Yeah, if you have the very, very strong Zaya. But again, I would say that's probably only a chumrah, because since it's in an open space in your sink, unless it's very, very contained, we wouldn't be bidyevet, we wouldn't worry about the zeya, because it's going to dissipate around the area of the sink. But you could see how there could be, if you had a ben yomo sink, that's going to connect through the zeya up to the top. So I could see that potentially comes something like if you pour a pot of spaghetti into the sink, right, and then the you have an intense steam underneath. But right. Meikra din, it might not be the case, because the limitation of the case of Zeya was where you had it was inside an oven where it was contained. So Meikra din probably wouldn't be a problem.
The trash disposal.
Yeah. Underneath.
So sometimes it gets backed up a little bit, depending on, you know, whatever mitzvahs are down in there, right?
Oh, yes.
And the water comes up. Does that have any impact on what I can put down there?
I think you would probably view the incinerator basin down there as a separate kli. Uh-huh. So if it backs up, so then what kind of water are we talking about? You know, is it a Kli Rishon? It's difficult to say it's a Kli Rishon, right? Because it's not attached to a heat element. Maybe it's Iroi Kli Rishon. If the top faucet is on, it's very hot. So you have tray food coming up and... You know, you have to. Exactly. So it's got to be. Number one, it's got to be Yatzo lettuce bowl. But number two, it's also got to be like. Bidyev, it's going to be a Kli Rishon at worst. If it's a Kli Sheni, so Bidyev, we're going to be Mako. Generally speaking, unless it was like a Chayadim has a Chomer, but Yad Nichves bowl, like super, super hot. But that's usually not so common. So it's an interesting thing in terms of kashering it. You know, how to kasher. I'm not sure you need to kasher. It's all the way in the bottom. You're not really using that. As opposed to Pesach, we're going to have extra stringencies. You know, if you have to be extra careful.
I wouldn't recommend using it with a blender.
Yeah. Okay, here's the third case. You go to a non-kosher restaurant, so what can you do there? Because the Shulchan Aruch has a whole discussion about what you can eat in a non-kosher restaurant, because the kalim in the non-kosher restaurant are not kosher. So they could have blios ben yomo from absolutely tray food. So there's a very important comment of the Ramah here. This is actually in Hilchas Hechsher Kalim. So we're moving from Hilchas Taruvas later to Kof Chaf Aleph. The Ramah writes the following. The context here is you did an inferior koshering job. You have something that requires full koshering and you only did partial koshering, which means it's not really kosher. So the Ramah writes... On that halacha Shulchan Aruch, which says you can't use it for hot water, you're actually allowed to use this item, which is not kosher, for cold. As long as you wash it carefully beforehand. And certainly, he says, in a kli that needs hagala. And then he adds, v'dafka b'derech arai, only in uncommon situations. Kagon shuba beisa ovid kochav. You're in a non-Jewish house. Obedievet or after the fact. Avlam rotz l'shtamish bo bekeva yesh machmir v'omer dafil l'shtamish bo tzon in tzarach hagol olivun gzereshem l'shtamish bo chamin v'hachi nogin. Says the Rama, depends if it's something you're going to do regularly or irregularly. If it's regular, constant, then hachi noginon, we are machmir. Do not use non-kosher dishes on a regular basis, even for cold. You know, you come to the kitchen and you have your treif cereal bowls. You can't use cereal bowls every day that are treif. The milk is cold, the cereal is cold, there's no blias. It doesn't matter. We're no igla hachmir. But you're traveling somewhere, you're in a meeting, so they have treif dishes. Although some achronim point out that there is an added chumer if you're talking about kli cheres. So maybe if you have china, there would be a reason to be machmir, even for one time. But certainly for glass, of course, but even not for glass, regular utensils. So you come down to the breakfast bar in the hotel, and they have real spoons. So first of all, you hope that the hotel you're using in, they were already mediach v'shifshef. If they weren't, so then don't use them. If you could tell they haven't been washed, probably...
You stay in nicer hotels, don't you? Yeah. I get plastic.
You probably don't want to use it if it hasn't been washed, but halachically you shouldn't use it if it hasn't been washed, because it's going to have the residual treif that they had on it. But generally speaking, they put it through probably a commercial dishwasher, so it comes out on the other end. So you're using it for cereal or your cold food, or you order a drink at the bar, so they're giving it to you in a mug or whatever. So if it's glass, so of course there are many reasons to be lenient about glass in terms of blias and the glass b'chlal. But generally speaking, when it comes to kalim, as long as it's bederech arai and the food that you're using is cold, so then it's going to be mutter. So then the question becomes, what are you going to order? So it's complicated because the Shulchan Aruch has a heter of, and the Ramah is talking about lemons, which is a controversy because maybe lemons are sharp and sharp foods have more complicated taste transfers. But leaving that aside, we have a general principle that if something is not sharp, and even though it's being cut with a knife, eventually you don't have to worry that it's going to be full of non-kosher food, because it's going to be wiped off by the time it gets to the, you know, you have a commercial kitchen where they're cutting 500 apples, even if they use the knife originally to cut bacon, by the time they get to your apple, it's going to be okay. The question, though, becomes, how practical is this? So Rav Shechter pointed out that it depends on the kind of place you go, and he also observed that some people shared with him, it depends not just necessarily on the quality of the hotel or the restaurant that you're eating in, but in the style of the chef. You could be at a, a 4-star restaurant, but if the chef is a slob, so he's going to be mixing his knives for different things. As opposed to, you could be in a small type of restaurant, but they're very careful about what they use. So it's a good question, practically, what you can eat in these places. Generally speaking, a davar charif is out, so we should avoid onions and radishes and things like that. What about a fruit plate? So it probably depends on the place where you go. You know, if you notice, if you go to Jewel, they have fruit that has a hashgacha on it, and they have fruit that doesn't have a hashgacha on it. I don't know. I didn't check in the back of Jewel. I suspect that Me'ikar HaDin, you could buy the fruit without the hashgacha, because they're not using the fruit. The fruit guys are cutting fruit all day long. They're not using the fruit from the knife from the boar's head section and the deli counter. You know, when you walk in on the left side, they're not doing that. And even if they were, by the time you get to it, the Ramah has the school. Now, so they still have the fruit with hashgacha on it, but Me'ikar HaDin, it's probably going to be mutter. So if you go to a restaurant, I don't know. It's hard to know, you know, to order a fruit plate, so you have to assume that there's so much fruit that there's not going to be that.
I just wondered about the freshly squeezed oranges over there.
So I would think, again, I'm not a post-sick, everybody knows that. Yeah. I would think that's Hetagomer, because it's specialized equipment. Right. Meaning, what are they putting in there? So I would think that's mutter.
I'm not sure I fully understand this concept of, like, hey, it starts off like you're cutting it at first. Like, if you're cutting bacon, it's treif. At what point along the way do we need to care?
Great. So the answer is that the case that the main lemons that they're talking about, right. You're right. It's kind of a peculiar idea, but it's like, wait a second, what's the likelihood that this apple that I'm buying that was cut with a knife, what's the likelihood that it's treif? And the answer is very insignificant. Because even if it was being used by a knife that was carrying treif, the apple itself is cold. So there's no taste infusion going on here. What are you worried about? You're worried about maybe there's some piece of residual schmutz maybe there's something there. So the Ramah says, you don't have to worry about that, because they're cutting, in the back of the kitchen, they're cutting 100 apples. So the likelihood is, okay, maybe there was one apple, but that apple is long gone. You don't have to worry about it. So you're right, it's not what we're used to, where we're saying, oh, it's this and it's not that. It's here, it's more like, what's the likelihood of this? And the answer is, slim to none. And that's why it's mutter. So in terms of the actual food, I don't know, everybody will ask their own posting to figure out like what you can order, but in terms of, you know, you want a bowl of cereal where you know it's all cold, it's never been cut by anybody, or you want to order a drink in a glass, stuff like that, that should be no problem.
But you can't go, but so from what you said, though, you can't go into this situation knowing that. In other words, you can't go to a, hypothetically, you can't go to a hotel knowing that you're going to have a bowl of cold cereal, because you know ahead of time, right? We said the situation where you can have it is if you're putting, okay, so you thought they were going to have something that's not there, fine, I'll have the bowl for my cold cereal. If you know I'm going to this restaurant, I know they have kosher boxes of cereal, but I'm going to use their bowls, that sounds like that might be an issue then.
Oh, so I would say the difference will be like this. To do it intentionally is okay as long as it's a one-off. Meaning, I travel once a month. So once a month I use this non-kosher bowl because it's not a consistent thing that I'm doing on an everyday regular basis. That's what he means. That's why I think the term exactly, derech arai, in this haphazard type of manner. I don't think it's a problem so much to say, I know tomorrow I'm going to be in the hotel and I know I'm going to eat it, that's a problem. It's not a problem because I'm only doing it once. It's not my behavior pattern. That's the difference.
It'd be like you were your job every day, you're using
exactly. If every day you ate in the cafeteria and every day you were eating on their metal spoons, that would be a problem, according to Ramah. We should be machmer for that. Exactly. That's the difference.
I'll preface it by saying I don't do this. But in theory,
yes,
I could have a problem. If I know every week for the next 6 months, spending Monday to Thursday in the same hotel,
exactly,
that could be a problem.
It would be. It would be a makom lahachmir, like the Ramah says. Nogin lahachmir, because you would say every day, the whole week, you're going to eat the same, you know, spoons. Mm-hmm. With the same breakfast, that would be regular.
Yeah,
I would think that.
Breakfast.
Right, and you would probably use the plastic anyway.
Yeah.
But that's the difference. You know, you take the kids on a vacation somewhere, so we're all eating in the continental breakfast with the same cereal. So we know we're going to eat the continental, but we don't bring breakfast. We're going to eat their breakfast, but that's because it's a one-time thing. It's not something that we do every day. Okay.
And you don't need to make this calculation of like, hey, if you bring out like here's 20 apples and stuff like that, and I don't know what was before this. Like, you know, which apple am I picking?
Oh, so that's why I said at the beginning, like Rav Shechter was not clear, because, you know, if you're generally speaking, when you pick one apple, you don't have to worry, because the vast majority of the apples are kosher. Right. So Kol D'Parish, Merubah Parish, there's no way for you to check. But Rav Shechter was a little bit concerned, and that's why I think everybody will speak to their posting. Everybody knows what the dynamic is in their office and the meetings that they go to. But he was somewhat concerned. If you go to a restaurant where you really have no idea what's going on in the back, So on the one hand, you'd say, yeah, you can order a cold salad. On the other hand, one might be concerned that you don't know what's actually going on in the back there.
Just moving
back exactly, and yeah. You don't have the same heter as the apple heter. The apple heter, the May lemons heter, is how many vegetables are they cutting in Jewel? How many carrots are they cutting? Thousands. Hundreds and thousands. As opposed to in the restaurant, they're not making thousands of salads. They're making a bunch of salads depending on who orders, and we don't know the ratio of how many salads and how many steaks they're cutting, and so it's more complicated. Mm-hmm. It's more complicated. It's much easier in the case where you say, okay, I'm going to the Jewel and I'm going to buy the fruit. I end up in, you know, Yehupitzville, and they have a Kroger's with cut-up fruit. So we'd say to ourselves, great, you can buy the cut-up fruit. It doesn't have hashgacha, that's no problem. But if I'm ending up in a treif restaurant where I don't know what's going on in the back, so there, you know, there's more makom lahakel, excuse me, there's more makom lahachmir, even though there might be makom lahakel as well. Okay, the last comment that I wanted to conclude with is the issue of Basar Shenisali Min Ha'ayin, which comes up in a lot of different contexts. You know, maybe there's an office refrigerator, and I bring a lunch, and I put my lunch in the fridge. So I gave you here the Aruch HaShulchan, this is from Simin Kuf Yud Ches, HaMeniach Oved Kochavim Befeiso Ubo Dvarim Shem Huch Lefu Yesh Behem Afilu Iser Torah Im Uyotzi V'Nichnas O Afilu Shah Zman Rav V'lo Hodiyo Shaddai Kalishos Mutar. In general, the Shulchan Aruch says, I have a concern. I have a Romanian sandwich. I leave it in the fridge. Somebody comes by and they see Romanian sandwich. They're like, seriously? And this happened, honest to God, Ribbono Shel Olam can testify, this was a Maisa Shaya that happened with Nechama. She was once traveling to family Simcha or something. And so we usually, when we go, we try to bring Romanian. So in the hand luggage was a Romanian salami. And it got pulled off. And the man said, so what is this? She says, it's a kosher salami. He says, is that from the place on Clark Street? I kid you not. The African-American TSA agent. Okay, so here they are. They're in your office. They see Romanian salami in the fridge.
We're going to have to
confiscate. That's right. It's dangerous. So they see your Romanian salami in the fridge, and they say, ooh, that looks really good. So they're going to take a piece of your Romanian salami. They're not lahachis. The Aruch HaShulchan explains in the Hemshech, they're not lahachas, but they want to taste it. But they notice that if they take a piece of your Romanian salami, what's going to happen? You're going to come back and you're going to say, oh, I have a piece missing. So they take a piece of their, you know, Jewel salami, Mariano salami, and they stick it in instead. That's the concern. It's a chashash's Shema Yavo Lahachlef. They're going to swap it out. This is what we call Basar Shenisali Min Ha'ayin, unsupervised meat. So the Aruch HaShulchan points out, based on the Shulchan Aruch, that if you have somebody who's Yotzei V'Nichnas, coming in and out all the time, so then you don't have to worry. They're standing next to the office fridge, you know, kind of minding their own business, eyeing your Romanian salami. They're not going to start messing with your sandwich because you might come in at any time. So therefore, you have mitigated the problem of Basar Shenisali Min Ha'ayin. Or similarly, Lo Hodiyo Shadayto Lahashos. You put it in the fridge. You don't tell the person when you're going to come back, when you're having your lunch, or when you're going to go get a drink at the water cooler. So there's what we call in halakha, that we call mirsas. There's a fear.
It's like an yichud too, right?
Yeah, it's the same concept. It's mirsas. So therefore, the person is not going to be choshud lahachlif. The last thing that you can do, which is sometimes you don't have that, you're going to be going on a trip or something, so you can make a simon. You take a piece of tape, and you tie it around the top, and you write your name on the edge of the tape, and you see if somebody ripped it off, it would definitely be Nikar. So by doing that, you will have avoided this type of situation. But what about if you have the opposite case, where you're not going to tie up everything? Let's say in our house, we have a non-Jewish babysitter who comes to watch our kids, who's been coming to our house for 7 years. So does that mean that all the food in my freezer is Basar Shenisali Min Ha'ayin, because I'm gone from whatever, 8 in the morning or something, and don't come home until 5:45 at night? My wife is out of the house, and everybody knows that we're out for a long time, and we never come back in between unless it's a very unusual circumstance. So I discussed this with Rav Schechter Shlita when we first had someone in our house watching the kids when Chaim was born, and he had an amazing observation. He said the following. He said, wait a second. The whole concern is Shema Yavo Lahachlif. Maybe they'll take your meat and exchange it for somebody else's meat. But if we tell our babysitter, you can eat anything in the house, no problem.
Right.
So then you have mitigated the concern. Because let's say I come home at the end of the day and I see, oftentimes, you know, Anna sometimes she eats ice cream. I see the ice cream is finished. I don't say, well, where did the ice cream go? Who ate all the ice cream? I say, Anna, do we need to buy more ice cream? So there's no concern that the babysitter is going to say, oh, you know, I ate the leftover chicken. I have to replace it with some other chicken that I bought at Mariano's. Because the concern is Shema Yavo Lahachlif. And that's another thing to keep in mind. You may have an office party or something, and you're going to bring kosher food. You're able to arrange kosher food is going to be delivered. And then it's sitting out. And you say, I have to leave the office. I'm going to go out of the office for an hour. Everybody knows you're gone for an hour. So does that mean that when you come back, all the food became basar shenis salam and ha'ayim? Exactly. No. Because you said before you left, this is for everybody. Gesunta, hey, finish it. No problem. And therefore, when they come back, they don't have to worry about switching in and out the meat. Because even though the meat is open, it's absolutely open, but there's no chashash lahachlif. And therefore, it's not considered basar shenis salam.
Can you send something to your babysitter saying like, hey, we don't like any meat. We don't like any food that's not kosher coming into the house. Like, isn't that enough? Because then she's not bringing, it's not like she's got a stash of other food that she's going to, like, replace it with.
Right, so that could also be another sniff lahakal in terms of a mirsas. If she knew that if you found a McDonald's bag in the garbage, she would be fired. So then you have a uman lamara umnase. You have a professional who doesn't want to lose their job component of it.
Is it just buzzer because of cost?
Yeah. You know, the akum is not going to be chashad lahachlif. There's no, you know, what's the big deal? If it's a yogurt, it's a, you know, it's not going to exchange it. It's because of the fact that it's very expensive. So these are, and that's part of the reason that there's a similar thing. When you get a delivery from anybody, there's a special requirement for extra simanim when you send meat. That's the whole simon in the Shulchan Aruch, rather than just you send cookies. Cookies don't require a special simon, but it's meat that requires that extra special simon. So to summarize, we talked about microwaves, we talked about hot water urns, we talked about kalim and food in non-kosher restaurants, and then the basar shenis halal and ayin. All these things are potential. You see, we covered it, and everybody's still standing.
Yeah.
Concerns that could come up in the office.